Hi, this is Katie Day and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Sarah Haworth. Sarah met her life partner, and now her business partner, of their jointly owned Fight Camp, Siam Boxing Camp. Siam was launched just over a year ago as a company in the community, and it was the best leap of faith she ever took. Sarah has always been into sport, ever since she was a young child and way before hyperactivity, in inverted commas, within children became fashionable. Her parents put her in sports clubs to channel her energy positively, which I think is a wonderful phrase. She fell upon a fight club in Hastings through a mutual friend who told her to go with her. At the time, Sarah was struggling to fit in the sport she loved doing, and she thought of trying to fit another new sport in, filled her with absolute dread. Predictably enough, she absolutely loved it, and soon enough, couldn't get enough of it. She was an absolute novice. However, within 6 months of joining, had her first fight competition. Sarah has nursed a long-term back injury that almost had her on the operating table last September. However, she defied all the odds, believed that she would get her body to where she wanted it to be, and slowly but surely has put herself back onto the strong road of recovery. Everything starts with a vision. Sarah lives by the thought, believe in yourself and what you are capable of. Welcome, Sarah. Thank you very much for being interviewed. I was a little bit trepidatious about going to meet you for the name of the company, Siam Boxing Camp, and that you in your first fight competition with this. Oh my lord, who am I going to meet? But you're not what I expected.
That's good.
You're very friendly. I was expecting something very scary. When you think of women and fighting, they are not two words that generally go together. Or I have to say, Nicola Adams has changed that perception a bit by winning a medal in the 2012 Olympics. However, it's still not what you would associate with women.
No.
So tell me more about women fighting.
I still think that there's a tremendous amount of stigmatism. Obviously, it's still completely overpopulated by men. Hence, that's why I feel like I'm somebody that actually bucks the trend on many levels. For example, you see me now, I don't have a broken nose, I haven't got a split face. My brain cells are still intact. I'm still as dipsy as I would be if I was doing the other side of my business. Obviously Siam is a company in the community, but also I have another business that I've set up and run well.
Right.
And if it wasn't for that business, Siam Boxing Camp would never have been launched. But that is a business where I do have to be presentable. But it is interesting how the fighting side of my life does have its advantages, because many times I will be in a business meeting and I'm confronted with people that are just saying yes, no, that's fine, and then after the transaction of business they tell me that they weren't prepared to argue with me because of what I do in my spare time. So it does have its advantages.
But
it is still a sport that's, like I say, on the serious side. There's not enough women that actually do practice the sport, and I think it's still has stigmatisms, and people are very still kind of set in their mindset that, you know, I know that when I stepped into the sport, what deterred me was the fact that I thought it was a bit chavvy. The thought of putting on those pants, you know.
You can turn yourself into an Essex girl.
This is it. I was like, no.
The only way is Essex.
This is it. I mean, there's lots of reasons why you do move away from Peckham in the time in which I was brought up there. And if some of the listeners aren't too au fait with where we're coming from geographically, it's kind of like it was all shell suits. And
it's so, probably what in America they may call trailer trash.
That's right, yes, yes.
It's that exactly. kind of thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's what we're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, sports do have, you know, people will go into a certain sport because of, you know, the gear and, you know, what that sport, you know, how it's perceived. But I can tell you now, this is the best sport I've ever championed and been part of. And as a person, it's calmed me down. I channel my energy in an effective way. You know, in terms of, there was a couple of years ago that I was, you know, a bit argumentative. I'm a woman of principles, and therefore that would come away, come across in a way that could be seen as intimidating. But having adopted the sport, it really has calmed me down. I see life in a totally, totally different way now.
Wow.
And that is the holistic element of our sport.
Gosh.
Everybody thinks that when they enter a fight club that we give people weapons to go out and, you know, do some harm. Well, you know, you can. That's what you can do. That's what you're being taught to do. But because you do it in such a controlled environment, you're actually giving people the tools to kind of focus in on talking them their way out of certain physical situations. And it's amazing that the sport actually does that.
Well, weapons are only dangerous if they're in the wrong hands.
Exactly.
And actually people with little knowledge can be far more dangerous than people with a lot of knowledge.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Of a particular weapon. These yes. people who don't know how to use them are far more dangerous.
That's it, absolutely. And that's why the sports such as football, you know, you see footballers and rugby players with horrendous injuries because an elbow to the head is like putting a hammer to the head. That's just one of the strongest parts of your body. And yet you see, you know, rugby players and football players, you know, they're not allowed to, you know, it's not something that's particularly condoned, but it's so easy to just slip that elbow in. Well, it has a devastating effect, long-term effect and injury. Whereas we use our elbows, we use our eight limbs. It's the devastating art of Muay Thai that we practice.
So when you say fight club, is it boxing? Is it kickboxing or is it something else or is it combination plus other stuff?
It's a combination of obviously home in on the Muay Thai.
What is that?
So Muay Thai is basically the science of the eight limbs. So you're using your hands, elbows, knees and shins. So it's seen as one of the most devastating art forms of the martial arts.
Gosh.
And then we practice kickboxing.
Right.
And obviously we put the boxing elements into that as well. And then K1 is something that has become very popular. It's a very popular fight form, which kind of blends the Muay Thai and the kickboxing and basically the stand-up fighting elements all together.
And you mentioned weapons.
Yeah, so weapons being...
The body.
The body weapons,
okay.
Yeah. No
okay.
knives, okay. No guns. Yeah, yeah.
That's a relief.
Yeah, just out.
So the weapons that you were born with.
This is it.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
So it's an exciting form of fighting. That's how we feel about it. If you're... Personally, I've done boxing where I've just focused on my hands. I'll sometimes attend a boxing class, but I find it a little bit too static for me because
right.
I want to use my legs.
Right.
And yeah, as soon as we start focusing on using all our weapons, then for me, the sport becomes far, far more exciting and exhilarating than just focusing on, you know, just one weapon. Our hands.
Yeah. Can somebody do this and not have to follow it through to actually fighting in a competition? Just do it
absolutely.
As a keep fit?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it would be... I mean, you've only got to look at, you know, a fighter's physique and the level of conditioning that goes into being ready to fight, like I say, is one of the best journeys you could take your body on to get it to where you want it to be in terms of fitness levels. Because just the combat style of fitness is second to none. It's explosive, it's demanding, it's challenging, but at the same time, it's really, really fun. And it's that holistic element that you get from it as well. Right. So you come out feeling like you have worked out, but you've also focused on the mind and the soul.
So how does that work then? How do you do that in that kind of environment? I mean, and how does it differ, say, from an aerobics class or yoga or Pilates, where there's like a meditation at the end of it or something? How does it differ?
Purely based on the fact that you're raising the heart, obviously the heartbeat, you're raising that. Obviously, you do that in any fitness session in order to, if it was weight loss, that's what you were looking to achieve. But it's things like we would implement skipping, for example. Now, a lot of people would think, oh my goodness, you know, I've not picked up a skipping rope since I was 4. Us ladies who have had children, you know, jumping for any length of time is problematic, you know, because in those lower regions, it's all gone a little bit.
And even if you haven't had children, it's still challenging.
This is it,
tell you.
Absolutely. But the mindset, it's actually the physical training in terms of the mind that you have to generate to coordinate that skipping rope and get the body working with that skipping rope is kind of like, you're just...
Okay, so you mean you have to be in present time?
That's right, yes.
So it clears the mind of being distracted by
absolutely
other stuff.
Yes, yeah. It's,
okay.
You know, it's a little bit like doing Sudoku, you know. It's like you're homing in on just achieving that target. So we get loads of, I mean, we get people that train with us from the age of 7 up until the age of 71.
Really?
Seriously.
Because I was going to ask you, is there an age limit?
No.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, I'm probably old enough to be your mother. Not quite. Okay, no. Okay, older sister. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm only 3.5 years off 60. I'm far too old.
No, not
to
at
even
all.
Start this. You know, my body is going through its natural life transition, which I'm in, deep joy. And I'm noticing a difference, that it's not as strong as it used to be. Mm-hmm. I feel more vulnerable.
Yes.
My balance isn't what it used to be. So I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, it's okay for Sarah, but I couldn't do this. I'm too old.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I got into the sport when I was 35, 36. There's a lot of people out there retiring.
Yeah, that's 20 years younger than me.
But again, my belief in everything is you're only as old as you feel you are.
True.
You know, and
true.
I've had that outlook in my head. I'm still 17, you know.
I understand that one.
I'm not doing, you know, I don't go out drinking. That's not part of my program, just because it doesn't float my boat anymore. I, you know, trying to deal with that a horrific hangover is no doubt like
it's
somebody taking a punch to the face, which I seem to take better. I'll go and actively take a couple of bit of pounding a couple of times a week, but like I say, horses for courses. But joking aside, no, you're never too old. I mean, I've got one particular member that does train. She's female and she's 71.
Wow.
And she is rocking it.
Oh,
seriously.
My gosh, good for
she
her.
She puts the younger people to shame.
Wow.
Yeah.
And has she been fit all her life, or is this a...
She's done yoga.
Okay.
She's dabbled in and out. You know, life does take over.
It does.
But my biggest ethos is you have to have a reason. You know, your reason has to be big enough to make you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So seasonally, it doesn't matter whether it's raining or if it's snowing, if it's icy. You know, if you wake up and you say you're going for that run, you'll go for that run. You know, if your reason is to fit into that dress at the end of the month, or is it if it's that you're going to have that glass of wine at the end of the day, that reason has got to be so big that it makes you do it.
So what I call when I'm coaching people, it's towards motivated, not away from focused. So quite often people will start something because they're away from focus. In other words, they're moving away from the fear of being where they are.
Yes.
And actually, if they can switch that and work towards the motivation of the joy at the end, it's far more compelling.
Yes.
So that's really what you're saying, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
You can
yeah.
be towards motivated. So if people want to lose weight, they're usually doing it because of the fear that they think they're overweight, rather than the joy of being fitter.
Right, yes.
So it's just switching that head tape internally,
yes.
and having the energy focused in the right direction.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why you find that And that's, I think, is key to sticking to something.
Yeah.
Because else you get into a faddy kind of, you know, something that just doesn't last. Mm. But again, it is horses for courses, and there is only, you know, 1% of the population that are stupid enough, and I have to say stupid, because stupidity does come into it, to step into that ring. You know, that is a whole different ball game. The minute that you take something that you're enjoying, i.e. you're going along to these classes and you're getting something from it in terms of it's being part of something, it's a community thing, you're meeting up with your friends, you're having a bit of a giggle. That's how it started for me. And then it's then you start thinking, oh, actually, I'm quite good at this. I can do this. And then someone says to you, you know, well, you are quite good at that, actually. And actually, there's a competition coming up. Do you fancy competing? And then you think, well, okay, well, what's stopping me? Because that's another thing. Mm. You know, when we get to a certain age, we think, are you having a laugh? What, me? You know, the first time I stepped into the ring, I had my children there supporting me. Wow. And so I had three children shouting, come on, Mum, smash her up, smash her up, you know. And you think,
this
morally,
is the right thing to be showing your children,
you do this whole journey where you're in that ring and you have an out-of-yourself experience, not very long, because you can't afford that kind, those kind of thoughts. You need to be focused. And I thought, this is insane, you know. My children are saying, smash her up. The one thing I teach them at school is that, you know, we have kind of almost like a zero tolerance to violence. And yet they're goading me on to smash another mother up who's got her children giving same her on. Yeah, exactly. but it's a sport. And it is one of those sports where it's not a team sport in the sense that, you know, you're not in there with, you know, somebody who's going to score for you. It's, you're in there on your own, and it's a lonely game, and the training can be lonely as well, because again, you've got to have high levels of discipline. And that's not to put anybody off, because like I say, only 1% of the population take it that far, and you can see why, because the journey is so intense. It's intense on the body, it's intense on the mind, and then when you're in that ring and you have given it everything you could give, you've given it mentally, in terms of hours and training. You know, if I'm competing for a fight, I'm doing 10, 12, maybe 14 hours training a week, if not more than that. But then when you look at my lifestyle, how am I fitting that in? But you make it happen. And then you're still in that ring. And as that first round goes, you've lost, well, in the first couple of seconds, you've lost 25% of your fitness just due to adrenaline. So the other 75% has got to mean something, else you're going to be out in the first round. So it's an insane journey to be on when potentially you can only be in that ring maybe 5-6 minutes.
Well, it's like Olympians, isn't it? They spend all their time preparing for that one moment.
That's it, yes.
And it's an amazing feat of human nature and human spirit, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody who prepares so long for seconds.
Mm. Absolutely.
And you're either going to make it or you're not going to make it. And it's as simple as that. And it's amazing. How do you balance your children watching you fight and balancing that with the message that you promote non-violence wherever possible? How do you make sense of that in their own minds?
And I'm pleased you've raised this, because it does personify all the benefits of our sport. So my son came home from school not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and he's year six. So in this country, he's going to be 11 in a couple of days' time, in fact. And he's been practicing Muay Thai for about three years now.
Right.
So he started fairly young.
Yeah.
He started at kind of like the right age. Anyway, there was an incident at school. Now, there was a time a couple of years back where my son had, I would say, anger issues. He found it really difficult to communicate how he was feeling. There were children at his particular school that would goad him They knew where to take him and what buttons to
push.
Kids
do, don't they?
Yeah. And he'd not long been doing the sport. And so it was a little bit, within that peer group at the time, it was a little bit of, there was a lot of bravado going on. They knew that he was doing a sport, so they were looking to push the buttons, you know, to see.
And test him.
Yeah, where he would go with it. And now when I look back, at that point in time, he was getting into trouble at school because they were saying, look, you know, he's overstepped the mark. But again, you look at all the, you look at the whole picture, and I'm not making excuses for him at all. He, you know, he did lash out on one particular occasion, but in all fairness, you know, he was launched at. So you then do that whole thing. Well, was it self-defense? So a couple of years on, we've had an incident at school and he came home sort of beaming. And I was like, oh, you know, did you have a good day? And generally he loves school. He's had a great day at school. He said, oh, Mum, yeah, this situation really made me laugh today. So I said, oh, what was that? He said, this particular boy who is a troublesome boy. He said, we're in the playground. He said something stupid. I just thought that was really silly. And he came in and he went for a body shot. And he said, Mum, I could see it coming. It was so funny because all I did, he did a classic Muay Thai defence, which was just took one step back and he sort of put his arm out as a defence. And the boy came towards him again because obviously now the boy that threw the shot is the one who's humiliated.
Yeah,
because
really
in front of all
silly.
The other boys, yeah. It's like, you've nearly fallen over. Che's just looking strong because he's taken that step back. The boy came towards him again to launch into him, and all Che did was just put his hands out as if to say stop. Yeah, so he didn't push him, he just put his hands out as a defence to say stop. The boy walked into that defence, and that's the teachers had seen the whole situation. Now, when I look back and I see the journey my boy has made, that's what I'm talking about. There's just something that is so... something happens that you can't, you know, when I talk to parents, I say, you know, if particularly the young boys, you find it a lot, their testosterone kicks in and one, they just wake up one morning and they're just, you know, your boy is turned into like this beast, you know, and you think, yeah. Oh my goodness, he went to bed playing Lego and he's woken up and he's like Bear Grylls who hasn't been fed, yeah. It's, you know, that just seems to just be organic and seems to happen.
It's interesting because my partner used to do karate and he used to teach karate.
Mm.
And he said the very first move that I used to teach students was how to kill someone.
Wow.
He said because it's a hit to the stomach.
Yes, yes.
And he says, but it's a non-contact sport.
Mm.
So, you know, in karate, you don't actually touch. It's just the moves.
Mm.
But he said, you know, the kick was to the sternum, and it was you visualize not just hitting, but you visualize it, your punch going through to the spine.
Right.
That's what you're visualizing.
Yes.
Although, you know, you don't actually touch the other person.
Mm.
He said, but that's what that was the very first move that you taught people.
Mm.
And he said, but what my sensei said to me and what I used to say to all of my students was that if you find yourself in a situation of trouble, number one, you run away.
Mm.
Number two, if that doesn't work, is that you try and talk your way out of it calmly.
Mm.
Number three, if number two doesn't work, is you punch them and then you revert to number one. And you run away. He said, but karate is not a license for you to get into fights.
That's right, yes.
And actually, all martial art is about the avoidance of conflict.
Absolutely.
It's not about the instigation of conflict.
No, absolutely. And anybody... I mean, we are passionate about what we do, but the minute we see those traits, or we don't accept bullies in our camp.
So yeah. How can you tell when people first join that they're joining for the right reasons?
You have, well, obviously you have to have an ability of tuning into that person,
yeah.
But the way that we work, and not all clubs are the same, but we closely monitor everything we do.
Right.
And the thing is, I know for a fact that the sport has taught me to be even more instinctual.
Right.
You do work on your gut. You can get a sense. You know, I've worked with And because it's a male-dominated sport, and I'm not saying that females, you know, aren't, you know, capable of having the same traits, because I have worked with females that I've had to say, you need to rein it in a little bit, because how many of us do know our own level of strength? You know, that's part of, that's key to the sport as well, is you knowing your boundaries, your range, and what, you know, how hard you can punch. It's not about how hard you can punch. You're not in there to kill each other. You're in there to learn a sport,
right,
and to learn key skills. But we had one particular member that did join with us, and he was great, and again a real champion for our sport, in the sense that he was an older member of the community. Right. He was around 65 years of age.
Wow.
He'd come to us because he'd always wanted to do fighting, but for health reasons that hadn't always been something that he could go for. He'd seen his doctor, he had to drop a good stone in weight, in which he did do whilst he was training with us. He used to come and train at least twice a week, maybe three times a week. He was 65 years in age. But what was happening was that he was getting super heavy-handed. Yeah, he had issues and demons that he needed to put to bed.
Right.
Now, our sport can help, you know, individuals with that. But like I say, it's not a sport whereby we're giving people the weapons to be able to go out and hurt other people. And when that starts to happen in your camp, yeah, you rein it in really, really quickly.
So how did you do that?
So through sparring, again, really closely monitoring. So at the end of every single session, we spar, because that's the sport. So there's a lot of people that come into our arena and they say, yeah, quite happy to learn the drills, but I don't want to spar at the end. And it's like, well, we have a really good way of actually getting them to feel comfortable with that concept, because you have to really push home that this is a contact sport. We're not here to make loom bands. Yeah, there is a contact element to it, and there has to be something of that intrigued you and pulled you in. Yes, you're not here to get hurt, but you're here to learn. And sometimes I know in my own experience, it was through actually another female that I got a bit of a bop on the face, and it was because my guard wasn't tight enough. So it was that was the biggest lesson I was ever going to learn. And at that point, it was make or break, because at that point you think, right, I'm involved in a contact sport. Do I like this? You know? Is it okay for me to now go to work the next day with a bit of a mark on my face? And that's for you as an individual to decide whether the sport is okay for you at that level. Do you see where I'm going?
So can you not just do the fitness side of it? Is it absolutely essential and non-negotiable that you do the sparring? Or can you just do it for the fitness?
Depending on the clubs that you go to, in our camp, it will be, it's essentially, it's part of the practice. It's part of our code that we do spar at the end of every session. It's on our website, you know, it's part of how we train. Okay. For example, we don't grade individuals. You won't get a grading from us, because we don't actually, you know, we basically train people to get fit or train people to fight. Simple as that.
Okay.
And if you want to find a club where you want to be graded, there's plenty of other clubs out there that will do that. But we're very much, that's our ethos and where we're coming from. But, you know, like I say, if you take, it kind of, once you get hit, you know, it brings all the, you know, it brings the reality of the sport that you've just got involved in, you know, to the forefront. And then it's, like I say, it's up to you whether you decide that that's really the sport for you. But we were closely monitoring this particular individual. And in one particular session, he was too heavy-handed. So he was spoken to at the end of the session, and he was told he needed to rein it in. And it was a bit like a dripping tap scenario as well, because some people are just like that, or he might have had a bad day. So you kind of, you know, you're putting jigsaw pieces together. And it was a dripping tap scenario, because he'd have a session like that, and then it'd be fine. And then he'd spar with a certain individual, and then you'd see again, you'd rein it in again. And then it was the, you know, that third time when you've had to say it too many times, and when you pull that person aside and you say, actually, it's not okay. And you do the zero tolerance. You say, you know, for now, you're not going to spar. Well, he wasn't particularly happy with that. And again, you, when you're dealing with certain people as well, some people don't like being told, you know. And then,
I just think there's a lot of people don't like being told.
And in our sport, you know, Phil, who's the other side of Siam, who's the genius, because he's the one that comes with the 27 years experience, and he's the master, you know. But, you know, if the dude says no, the dude means no. And there's, you know, a lot of guys and girls out there that have an issue with being told that, you know, that's the way it's going to be. But unfortunately, we're the ones that, you know, have to make sure everyone's safe, and that it is a safe sport. And so be it on our heads.
So what happened? Did he leave?
So obviously we made it very clear that he was still very welcome, but he would not be sparring at the end of a session. And the diplomatic way that it was put to him meant that he missed the following session, and the session after that, he just decided that it wasn't for him. And he, you know, was gracious enough to come and see Phil and I. And he said, I do actually feel that there's, you know, a few things that I just need to iron out within myself.
Oh, good for him, for recognising
exactly.
That.
So the sport took him there, you know, and I feel privileged for the sense that it was something he'd always wanted to do. And for whatever reason in his life, that was never made, you know, it was never made possible for him. So we gave him that opportunity. And like yourself, he might have been thinking, oh, it's just something I'm never, ever going to get to do in my life, in my lifetime. And I think that that would be a tragedy. And I think that that's something that would be really, really sad. But out of his experience with us, and he's still in contact, you know, and he's still...
And maybe once he sorted his issues out, he might come back.
This is it, absolutely. But he did achieve what he set out to do, which was he did lose weight, he got fitter. He shocked us. Like I say, we would go to events and networking events, and as we were pushing the camp forward, you know, we would get people saying, oh yeah, but who's your oldest member? And so it was always him that we mentioned, because it was phenomenal, you know.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So well, how is it a company in the community then? How does that work? What does it have to comply to be a company in the community?
Okay, so basically a company in the community is that we are there for non-profit in terms of the profit.
So is it like a social enterprise?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So we, the money that we turn over goes straight back into the camp.
Right.
And Phil and I do it for passion above anything else. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a wonderful position to be in, that you can be doing something that you love and loving what you do. And we're able to do that. We're in a position in our lifetime to be able to do that. And so what we get back is just, is amazing. You know, we get to practice our sport, which is fantastic. We get to meet fantastic new people, and we get to touch the hearts of people in the sense that they can't get enough of it, you know, on the level of which they've joined the camp for. Because, like I said, there's people in our camp, and there's people that's walked through our door for a whole variety of reasons that you couldn't actually, on an application form for funding, tick the boxes to. I have one individual, he's he's 14 now, but when he started with us, he was like, just turned 13. And he said it was so, I would never have expected him to say it, but he said, I just, Siam's one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Wow.
I was like, really? He said, do you know what? It's just about being part of something. You know? And I was like, wow. Now, I'm part of lots of different things, but this is a 13-year-old boy sitting in my car on the way to Siam telling me that, you know? And this is a boy that, again, struggled in school. He got bullied. Whether he takes it on and he takes the sport to a competitive level is, you know, is by the by. It doesn't matter. The mere fact is that, you know, he's doing the sport, he's loving the sport, he loves meeting new people. And again, it's just about being part of something. I've done quite a bit of work just recently with Women's Refuge, and the ladies there absolutely loved the sessions. I took the sessions to them because obviously there's confidentiality issues. Mm. And out of that core group of eight women that accessed what we do, bearing in mind some of these women have come from, you know, domestic violence, yeah. you know, highly violent partners, highly violent past. One particular individual couldn't get enough of it, and she just said, "I want to fight."
Wow.
And she was 40.
Wow.
And she had the energy of, yeah, it just blew me away.
Did she come part of the club?
Yes. And the Women's Refuge actually looked at the process of sponsoring her to fight and compete.
Gosh.
But unfortunately, and this is where the system does break down, she got into a situation where she got evicted from the Women's Refuge through her liaison with another male, because of the fact that the place in which they lived, it was highly confidential in terms of the address is not allowed to be shared. And there was confidentiality issues. And so one minute she was there and then the next minute she was gone. And she'd returned back to the violent partner that had got her there in the first place. So it saddens me because I'd have loved to have said that was one of our success stories, because she was definitely on her way to make significant changes in her life. I mean, she'd been a smoker. She was still smoking right up until the first session she did with me. And she did the first session, of which I do have to say that she ran to the toilets 10 minutes into the session to go and be sick.
Oh, dear. Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
Is that what you took her through?
She took herself there.
Wow.
Because she was so, she was just so fired up. She was ready to go.
Wow.
I was just lucky. I was just, yeah, it didn't end up in the gloves. That was the one thing. I was like, be sick anywhere. Just don't be sick in the gloves. Not in the gloves. but she loved it. And with training, it was fantastic in the sense that we do have to take it into the uncomfortable zone to make it comfortable. She'd clearly taken it to the uncomfortable zone very quickly. And I thought, no, this is someone that really does want, she wants this, you know. And she accessed the sessions. It was eight sessions that we ran. And her skill set was phenomenal. You know, again, you know, it's like, sometimes you're born with that lion in your head and that lion in your heart, and you can just do the do. You're a natural fighter. And the minute you tune into that, that's when the sport becomes really, really exciting, because you can't teach that. Mm. It's like somebody who's really good at art. It's just naturally gifted. And it'll be wrong of any club or organisation to take the credit for that. But if you can give people and the skills to use their tools in a way that takes them to the level that they were, you know, put on this earth to do, that's a really exciting place to be in.
How do you balance that, though, with external preconceptions of men and women? Because a lot of people may think fighting is very unfeminine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And it goes against, actually, you know, we're the nurturers, we're the mediators, we're the negotiators, we're the mothers, whether biologically or metaphorically, we're the mothers. We're the ones that draw people in, put oil on troubled water. And for women to admit that they have that killer instinct, whether or not it actually manifests in that, but, you know, that level of testosterone that promotes that fighting spirit, that, but also inside all of us is a lioness.
Oh, absolutely.
But how do you balance that with external perceptions?
I think that you shut it out, to be quite honest. You have to be a pretty strong character, but you have to surround yourself with pretty strong people as well. I myself I've fallen on that. My family don't have anything to do with me because of the sport that I've chosen to go into.
Gosh, that's a bit severe.
Yes, yeah, and that is fact. My father refused to accept my sporting choice. He refused to come and watch me fight. And it's quite interesting because the psychology of that, and I thought about this before when we launched Siam, and again, whenever you launch anything, you don't know, you take that leap of faith, but my life, you are kind of jumping into blind waters, you know, and that takes courage anyway.
Yeah.
It went from being something that I was just accessing as a sport to something I was then going to compete in. And my father made his feelings very clear and said, you know, if you choose to take that sport on, I will never, ever come and watch you fight. And I said, that's fine. I can sleep with that. But obviously then you have family members, you know, they all put their opinion in. And, it is strength of character. But I just kind of sucked it in and I blew it out. And that's a really common phrase of mine. And I moved on and I eradicate dream squashers. Yeah. Who are they to tell me what I can and I can't do?
But did you also appreciate of where that was coming from?
To a degree. It was coming
from possibly a protective thing. You know, you're his little girl. However old we get, we're still kids to our parents.
Yes.
You know, I was 50 when my parents died. I could have been 5.
Yes.
You know, I was always going to be their little girl.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was seeing you at the receiving end of something so violent was probably potentially really painful for him.
Yeah. I know. But then I kind of like, my bite back would be that I home in on media and I say that Carol Vorderman, you know, wore some stupid high heels and fell over and broke her nose, which is far more of a bigger injury than I've ever incurred in the ring. Do you know what I mean? So when I have a gift, I think, of being able to put the reality into...
It's changing people's perceptions, isn't
it? Oh, absolutely. And yeah. To be honest with you, it angered me that it's old-fashioned, you know, it's kind of like...
Yeah, but he's your dad.
He is. But at the time I was 36 years of age, I'd had 3 children. I think I'm of an age where I can pretty much, you know, make up my own mind.
Of
and I think
you
it's
are.
A little bit like, you
I'm
know...
I'm not defending him.
No, not at all. And I'm absolutely, what you're saying is the mindset of... You know, a lot of males out there and a lot of people out there. I mean, for example, you know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, certain thoughts and feelings about tattoos. You know,
yep.
My father's never met my other half, but he's absolutely covered in tattoos and he'll call him a sailor, you know. but in actual fact,
even though they're a lot more fashionable now,
exactly.
I have a completely different
context now. And as a mother, I'm now going to say that, when my children decide to put art on their bodies, I will turn around and say, no doubt, well, I moisturised your skin for all those years and every blemish you got, I kind of tried to eradicate and now you're going to do something stupid like that. But, you know, like I say, it's horses for courses. And I think that it was that perception. At the end of the day, whatever the sport, it's a discipline. And I think the undertone of what I was doing was that all the good things I was doing was kind of bringing and cementing all the bad things they were doing in terms of their lifestyle and their life choices, which kind of then brings it back round to there's a lot of people in, you know, in our life that, you know, are kind of, they don't like success. You know, they don't like to be surrounded by successful people.
Well, it's threatening, potentially,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
I'm not sure that's a global thing, but it's very much a British thing.
Mm,
we're great
very.
At putting people up on pedestals and then knocking them back down with an awful lot of glee.
Absolutely.
Which is a part of the British culture I'm not terribly keen on.
No.
Because we're very good at it,
yes.
as a nation.
Yes.
And I, whenever I'm working with clients on whatever, whether it's on their personal branding, whether it's on their coaching, whatever, at the beginning, I'll say, this probably won't happen, but just in case, it might not be wise to assume that everybody close to you is going to be delighted with your change. And what you may come across and discover is that the people closest to you have an awful lot invested in keeping you where you are now.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Not supporting you in where you are going to go.
Yes.
And actually you have to help them through your change transition.
That's it. Yeah, no, absolutely.
And because they're going to be threatened.
Yeah, because ultimately you do leave them behind.
Yeah. But well, you don't have to.
No, you don't.
Because they can choose to come with you.
This is it, yeah.
But it's their self-esteem that will want to keep you where you are.
Mm.
And actually, we can't do anything about somebody else's self-esteem. They have to own it and do it for themselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you fall upon comments like, oh, yeah, but it's just Sarah, you know, everything lands in her lap, you know, she's had it easy. Far from it, you know. My life story is pretty colourful, you know. I was a girl born out of Peckham. It may as well have been Harlem. Yeah, it was hardcore. I went to an all-girls secondary school. I had to fight my way through education, an education system whereby, you know, the naughty girls got heard and the quiet girls got ignored.
Wow.
That was our culture. But I came out of school and I suppose, in a sense, I've always had to fight, you know. I'm a woman of principles. But I've had to fight for everything, you know. I've been in a legal battle over my own children for the past 11 years.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it's you feed me to the wolves and I'll come back leading the pack every single time. But it is that mentality. And so when the injury kicked in, it was, this is why people that train with us, when we don't accommodate excuses, yeah. This is why your reason's got to be so big, because if it's big enough, you'll do it. I don't really tolerate excuses, you know. Oh, it's a bit cold, whatever, put another jumper on. Yeah. But they designed thermals for a reason, you
There's
know.
No such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing.
This is it, exactly. Bad wardrobe choices. And the injury was a classic Sarah syndrome, in the sense that I had consultants around me saying, you know, we're going to have to operate. I was like, no, you're not. No way. You know, when a consultant sits with you and says, well, I do have reservations. And you say, well, what are those reservations? Well, your level of mobility at the moment far outweighs what your mobility is likely to be after we've operated on you. And then you think, well, actually, this is kind of like, this is like a two-way conversation, dude, because I have to agree for my body to be on your operating table. And right now, I just want to run for the door. So again, mind over matter, you know, and I'm not saying that for all injuries that that's testament, but your mind will give up before your body does. Believe you me, your mind will give up before your body does.
Plays great tricks on us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And
it can also be our best friend.
Yes, yes. So I bucked the trend and nursed a very painful injury for 3 years, but I still competed. I went to see a consultant on the Thursday who said to me, you slipped a disc, you trapped a nerve. And I said, well, I'm competing on Saturday. This was the Thursday. I said, I'm competing on Saturday. Are you telling me that I can't step in that ring? And she was like, well, I wouldn't advise it. And I was just like, well, luckily as a consultant, she was an athlete herself. So she could see the headspace and the torment that I was going to be in, having been told that I wouldn't be able to do that. So the great advice she gave me was, if your body feels like it needs to stop, you stop. And you don't lose on that. Yeah, that's the clever decision to make. And that was the best advice she could have given me, because I did go and I did compete and I did what I needed to do, and I delivered. And I didn't hurt myself. I didn't win the fight, but I didn't go out how I'd kind of in my head perceived I might, which was on a stretcher. So for me, when I stepped out the ring, I was a winner.
It was a positive.
Yes.
We've got less than a minute to go.
Wonderful.
Which I can't believe. So where, in 30 seconds, where are you taking Siam?
We are going to be the most funded boxing camp in the whole of the UK. That's exactly where we're going.
Wow.
That's my vision. That's where I've seen we were going to be the minute that we made our first funding bid application. And we will have a mixed core group of people, male, female, young and old, training amongst us.
Fantastic. That is a brilliant way to end. And if I go back to how I ended your introduction, everything starts with a vision. And you live by the thought, believe in yourself and what you are capable of. You are living testament to your thoughts and to your vision. So brilliant. Thank you, Katie. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Sarah.
Brilliant.
This has been Katie Day, and you've been listening to Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women everywhere are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.